recorded live by jml.org.au.
So continuing the story of Yosef in the Chumashim, we were up to the part where Yosef has now not able to control himself, according to some, and according to others, Yosef cannot bear the thought of revealing his identity to the brothers in front of the rest of Egypt, and he throws them out of the room. And I think I said yesterday we have a machlokes in Rashi, how to learn pshat in the Rashi itself. What's interesting is, though, that a lot of this has been prompted by one man, and that is Yehuda, of course. Yehuda, who does battle for his brother Binyamin. It's interesting to point out that this association between Yehuda and Binyamin doesn't just remain here, but it continues later on in history. We know that when the Beis HaMikdash was going to be built, it was built in the territory of two tribes. And the two tribes that would be sharing the part of the Beis HaMikdash would be Yehuda and Binyamin. So once again, they come together. There is this association. Later on, when the kingdom of Beis David is split in the times of his grandson, in the times of Rehavam, and we find that there is the northern kingdom and there is the southern kingdom, and they have two different malchus, two different malchios. Who do we find was at the southern end? It was Yehuda and Binyamin. So once again, we find there's a very strong association between Yehuda and Binyamin that goes hundreds of years later after this story as well. But what we ended off yesterday talking about the pasuk, Lo Yochel Yosef Lehisapik, Yosef was not able to hold himself or control himself, and he said, let everyone go out. And we're up to Mem Hei Posuk Beis, chapter 45, verse 2, Perek Mem Hei Posuk Beis, as he puts himself, Vayita in his Kola Bivchi, he puts his voice out in a loud cry, Vayishmu Mitzrayim, and Egypt hears it, and Vayishma Beis Paro, and so does the household of Pharaoh hear it as well. And Rashi points out that Beis Paro here, of course, does not mean literally the house. It means the household of Pharaoh. And we find this expression quite often used. Beis Yisrael, Beis Yehuda, Beis Yaakov. Doesn't mean the house, but it means the family. It means the whole group of people. So at this point of time, then Yosef opens up his mouth and he says to him the following. He says to them the following words: "Vayomer Yosef Alechov Posigimel." And Yosef said to his brothers, "Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Haoid Avichoy, is my father still alive?" V'lo Yochlu Echov La Noisosoy, and his brothers are not able to answer him. Kinivhalu Miponov, because they are shocked. They are shocked before him, or stunned before him.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. What a great movie.
Yeah. Yes. We'll discuss that. We'll discuss it. So Nivhalu Mipono, what does Rashi say? Rashi says Mipnei Habusha. They were shocked because of the embarrassment, because if there was one person that they didn't expect to see now, it would be the very man who they had sold 22 years earlier at the age of 17. And now he's telling them, I'm Yosef, and the brothers are simply not able to answer him. Okay? Now, when he says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, and he says, is my father alive? And obviously we have the obvious question, what do you mean, is my father alive? What do you think you've been hearing the whole time? Yehuda's been playing on the emotions of this emperor, or this viceroy, by selling him. And he believes his father will die. Everything was about the father, the father, the father. How many times did we hear the words, Avdecha Avinu, your servant, our father, over and over again? And now for Yosef to say, is my father alive? What does that mean? So there's two explanations that I'd like to share with you. One of them is from the Znaim LaTorah, not so well known, but I'll tell it to you first. The Znaim LaTorah says that Yosef was telling them the following. He was saying like this. Until now, what have they been accused of? They've been accused of being spies. Meraglim atem, you are meraglim. Over and over he has said, he leveled that accusation at them. Okay? When you accuse someone of being spies, then the people who are being accused will be very careful as to what they will say. Very, very careful as to what they will say. And they very often will not tell the truth. A good spy doesn't tell the truth at all. So therefore, until now, Yosef has been talking to them as a second in command of Egypt, telling them that they're spies, and they're answering back, and they're saying, we have a father in Egypt, we have this and that. But now Yosef is saying, for the first time now, I'm not going to talk to you as a viceroy, as a second in command of Egypt. From now, I'm going to talk to you as Yosef, your brother. I don't know what you've said to me until now. Maybe it's all been lying. It's all been not true. I want to know now, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. I'm now no longer talking to you as the Mishneh LeMelech. Please tell me the truth. Is Daddy really alive? Is Daddy really alive? According to the Zaman Torah, that's his first question. His first question is, look, all this act and all this imposting and all this lying and all this, I don't know what's true, but now I want to really know the truth. Ha'oidovichai. And that's the reason he asked this question. It's a very interesting explanation. Ta'anu li yisa emes, ha'oidovichai. Tell me the truth, am I? Is he still alive? Okay. Another explanation, again offered by the Znaim Latorah, is as follows. He says, until now, I had to swallow my, if you like, my emotions. I had to hold back my emotions every time you said the words, Abdecha Avinu. Abdecha Avinu. In fact, our rabbis tell us that Yosef lost 10 years of his life because he heard, and I don't understand this. I don't understand this, but I'll just tell you what it says. Yosef lost 10 years of his life. He passed away at the age of 110. First of all the brothers to pass away was Yosef, because he heard the brothers refer to his father as your servant, and he didn't respond. He didn't make any disclaimer. For every time that he heard Abdecha Avinu, he lost it. You'll say it only says five times Abdecha Avinu. So the Mefarshim asked that, and they answered because the interpreter said it, so he had to turn times. Five times directly from them, and five times interpreter. So the Medrash says he had. Now, the reason I find this very, it is a Medrash, why it's very hard to understand is because what exactly was he meant to do? If he was meant to protest and said, don't call my father your servant, well, he would give away again the concept. But I don't know. It's interesting. Yes.
Yeah. Achieve what he needed.
Correct. Correct. And that
should have been rewarded, not punished.
It's a strange. As I said, I don't understand this fully. I'm just giving over the Medrash as it is. It's a very difficult thing to understand. And the Chazal tell us that there's a few reasons. One reason that he lost 10 years of his life, the first one to pass away, is because he heard these 10 times, Abdecha Avinu, your servant, my father, our father. Another reason it says is, never try to be the boss. It says the people who always want to be the boss of things, they tend to pass away earlier because they have all the sorrows of the world. The stress and the odd, and people want to be in the limelight. They want to be in control. A control freak. If you want to be in control all the time, it says you may have that honor of being in control, but it's not good for your health. It's not good for your things, for your blood flow, everything else. It says it shortens life. And the Gemara says this. The Gemara actually says this. Correct, correct. Not a punishment. Correct. It's brought down. And that's why people that were leaders, it was Mrs. Nefesh. They didn't want to be leaders.
Right? Got a job to do in this.
Exactly.
Like you're educating and you're the head of the school.
Anyway, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Ha'oid Avichai. So he is saying, says the Zayim LaTorah, he says, until now I had to hear these words, Abdecha Avinu, and I had to remain silent in order to be a stranger to you, and in order to know if you really feel guilty. But now I want to open up and talk about my father, not as your servant. Ha'oid Avichai, is my father alive? I don't want to hear the word Avinu, Abdecha, your servant, ever again. And he says it, Avi, my father. That's the second explanation of the Zayim LaTorah. A third explanation. And the third explanation is brought down by the Rebbe. And he says, he brings the question. This is a famous question that you've all asked about how come he needs to say, is my father alive? Obviously he's alive. And it's the question, by the way, one of the earliest to ask this was the Barbanel. And the Rebbe suggests the following. He says that on the pasuk Vayimoen lehisnachem, he refused to become comforted, or he was unconsolable. The Rashi explains why. Why could he never be consoled? We know that the time of grief is only for 12 months. The Gemara says you're not allowed to be in grief more than 12 months. As they state, right? That's the way. Chazal tell us Hashem made the human psyche in such a way that after 12 months we become already back, we can get back into life again. But with Rashi explains why was he not able to be ever comforted is because Ein Odom Mekabel Tanchumin Al Hachai V'Sovur Shemes. A person will never be consoled or comforted about a person who is really alive but who he thinks is dead. She'al Hames Nigzera Gezera Shishtakach Min Alev. It is only if a person has actually died that Hashem made that decree that he will be forgotten. When I say forgotten, that the grief will be forgotten. You don't ever forget how departed ones. But the grief will be forgotten. That gzera was only made if someone has actually died. But, loy al hachai, not for someone who is alive. There is no closure for someone who is really alive, even if one thinks that he's dead. V'lochein, and therefore, says Rashi, his Abel al Benoy Yaakov mourned for his son for years and years and years, Yomim Rabim. And therefore, the Rebbe says that when Yosef turns to his brothers now and he says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, I am alive, I am Chai V'Kayom, as you see me here, but I can't understand how my father could have lived through this. How could my father live through 22 years of agony? He says, this is something I want to know. How is it possible that he could survive such an experience? And that's why now that Yosef has revealed his identity, or is about to reveal his identity, he therefore says, Maharu va'alu alavi, hurry, quickly, go to dad. He says, now that the gzera's off, now that the time has come to bring him down, every minute counts. Because every minute now is costing his nefesh, costing his life. Ha'odo v'chai, can my father be alive? Based on this, the Rebbe also answers another interesting feature that we see here, and we're about to see it, and that is that throughout the conversation now, three times, no less than three times, Yosef keeps on saying, God has sent me, God has sent me, God has sent me, as a michya, as a source of sustenance for you, etc. You have not sent me here. God has sent me here. What is Yosef saying with these words? He's answering the obvious question. If you, Yosef, are so worried about the impact that it's had on your father, that therefore you can ask the question, Ha'oda v'chai, is my father alive? Then why didn't you communicate? Why didn't you say a word or send some message for the 22 years to your own father? And in order to preempt that, Yosef has to say, I could not, because Hashem had set me here, and I had to keep myself identity. It had to be in such a way because I was had a mission to be here in Egypt and never to leave. Not to leave until the time would come to bury, whatever. But that was it. That was my shlichus here. Had I revealed my identity, then I wouldn't have been in Egypt. God would have taken me out of here. And my father, Yaakov, would have got me out of here. It had to be a secret. That's how the Rebbe learns this conversation. So we've discussed now three explanations. Ahain ha'oda v'chai. But probably the most famous explanation, and that is so well known and brought down in many Sfarim, is the explanation that you'll find in a number of Sfarim. Ksav Sofer, the Beis Halevi from the Brisker, so many they home on this point, and that is as follows, and it's based on a medrash of Abba Yosef Kohen Bardolo. You hear this very, very often when people talk about Vayigash. This is probably the most famous medrash that they use when they talk about Vayigash. Omer Abba Yosef Kohen Bardolo, he says, Yosef was the youngest of all the tribes. And all the other tribes were not able to withstand his rebuke. They couldn't. Nivhalu miponav. They were totally dumbfounded. They could not. They were speechless. They couldn't answer it. Says Rabbi Yosef, says Abba Kohen Bardolo, if Yosef, the youngest of the tribes, well, almost the youngest of the tribes, was not able, they were not able to withstand his rebuke. He says, when the day of judgment will come, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will ask each person the questions, and judge each person, lefi ma shehu, that's the expression, lefi ma shehu, according to who he is and what he is, lo kol shekein, wouldn't it not be a kol shekein, a kal v'chomer, how much more so that we will be dumbfounded. We won't be able to answer anything. That's the Medrash. How does that help us understand why he needs to say, Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? And here you have, of course, the Ksav Sofer and others asking, well, what does this mean? How do we see that there was any rebuke? What was the rebuke that Yosef said? He doesn't say here, you have sold me to Egypt. Notice, there's no mention here in this pasuk about selling in Egypt. That comes later on. That comes in the next pasuk. But in this pasuk itself, when he simply says the word Ani Yosef Olivichai, there doesn't seem to be a rebuke. And the Meforshim ask, what does this Medrash mean? What does Abba Kohen Bardolo mean by they couldn't answer him because of the rebuke? What rebuke did he say? And the rebuke that they say is as follows. They were saying, Yosef was telling them, you keep on saying that, look what will happen to dad, look what will happen to dad, look what will happen to father. And all he has to say to them, I'm Yosef, tell me, is my father really alive? Is he really alive after what you've done? Is he really alive? He doesn't need to say the words, you have sold me in Egypt. Just those words alone. Ani Yosef, ha'od avichai, is my father still alive? In other words, what did your whole argument is based on the fact you're playing on my strings at saying, look what it'll do to dad, look what it'll do to dad. Why didn't you think of that? Why didn't you think of that, etc. Mm-hmm. And last week, I think we even mentioned this, that when Reuven, there's one of the explanations that Reuven said to in Reuven's words when he told the brothers when they expressed remorse and they said, oh, look what we did, Aval Hashemim Anachnu, we sold our brother and we didn't hear his cries for help. Ah, we were so bad. And what does Reuven say to them? I told you all the time, Al Techetu Vayela, do not sin with the lad. And most learn that this is, he's telling them off, right? They're already expressing remorse, but he keeps on telling them off. But other Meforshim say no, that Reuven is actually telling himself off. How is he telling himself off? He says, they're saying, oh, look what we did. We were so cruel to our brother. We heard him cry. We heard him scream. We didn't answer. We let him, we're so bad. And Reuven's telling them, it's my fault. Because I only told you, do not sin on account of the child. I never told you, what about daddy? What about Abba? How are we ever going to explain this to Abba? How is he ever going to recover from the grief? Yeah, you're going to say a wild animal tore him, etc., etc. But how are you going to ever recover? How's dad ever going to recover from this thing? And I didn't tell you that. I'm blaming myself for that. So according to this explanation, Reuben's not even just telling them off. He's telling himself off. He's blaming himself. I only said to you, Al techetu vayelet. I only said to you, don't sin on account of the boy. And according to the Meforshim, etc., they learned that this was the pshat. This is what Yosef says, Ha'od Avichai, could my father live through this? And at this point, Lo yochlu lanos osai. Clearly they cannot answer him. They are shocked, totally shocked. And that's how he learns the pshat in the Medrash. That's the rebuke. If Yosef, the youngest of them, could not answer, they could not withstand his rebuke, how much more so lo osai lover? Anyone has a question on this Medrash? Later on. Yes, he says, the yellow day nano, the boy is not here. Onanivo, where am I going to run from, says Rashi. Onanivo, where am I going to run from Tzara Shalaba, from the pain that's going to meet daddy. But that's later on when he comes back and realizes, reflecting. Sorry? Well, at that point, yes. At that point. Later on, they do. They all think of it because they actually demote Yehuda. Vayered Yehuda Me'echov. Yehuda loses his esteem before the brothers because they say to him, they realize now. Yeah, absolutely. Any other questions on this Medrash? Ksav Sofer has a very interesting question on this Medrash. He says, what did Avakon Badla said? He says, if Yosef, the youngest or the little one of the tribes, the Ktanon Shel Shvatim, and the older brothers, they couldn't answer his rebuke, he said. So, no, that's not the question that I was going to ask. The question that he asked, the question he does ask is follows. He says, what's the Kal V'Chomer? The Kal V'Chomer is because he's a young baby brother, and therefore, and they still couldn't, answer his rebuke. So how much more so the Kodesh Baruch Hu himself, for sure, we have the answer. He asks, who cares if Yosef was the younger of the brother or not the youngest of the brother? What position did Yosef have now? He was enormous. He was the second in command of Egypt. He could have had their heads off. He could have had them killed in the one. He could have, unbelievable. He had so much power. As I said to you, according to some, I think he says that Yosef endangered his own life by leaving himself alone with his brothers. He says, but at the same time, Yosef had so much power, incredible power in Yosef. So how can we say, Madoch Yosef was the youngest of the brothers? And nevertheless, what? They weren't able to answer his rebuke. But when is he rebuking them? He's telling them off now as the Mishneh LeMelech, as the second most powerful person, a man about whom Yaparo said, no man can lift his hand or foot in Egypt without this man's approval. Makes a good question. It makes it out like, oh, he's just the ketanon. He's the little one. He's the little baby, And they couldn't answer his rebuke. But he's not rebuking them now as Yosef ketanon shel shvatim. He's rebuking them now as the most powerful man in the kingdom other than Pari. The second question he asks is that the Midrash says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu will judge each person, it'll be lefi mashahu, according to where he's holding. According to where he's holding. What does it mean, lefi mashahu, according to what he is? What's Lefi Mashahu? So the Ksav Sofer answers and says, there is a din, and the Rambam brings this down as well, when a person is taken to court for a crime that they've done, they take into account many, many things. They take into account the actual criminal act, the thing that they've done, and they also take into account the circumstances. Okay? So for example, there's a big difference if someone insults someone else or punches someone else in a shul, and if the person hits his friend in shul, it's a bad thing, insults him in shul, it's a bad thing. But imagine if a person does it to the leader of the whole community or the leader of the whole country or something like that. That's the Avera is magnified so many times. I mean, if you take it to the extreme, we have what's called moirid b'malchus. If a person acts improperly to a king, the halacha is hoganosa. You can kill him. You can kill a person. Moirid b'malchus. Why? Because as the Rambam says, we take into account not just what the person does, but to whom it's done, in what circumstance it's done. All that, as the Rambam puts it, hakol lufi hamavayesh v'hamizvayesh. You look at who's doing the embarrassing and who's getting embarrassing. All that is very, very important when you work out damages. So Yosef was sold. It was a crime, no question. But who was it done to? It was done to a 17-year-old brother who keeps on telling tales on them, who they think is a roideif, who does this to that and that to that, etc. Enough, we're going to deal with him, etc. It's a criminal act, it's terrible. But who was it done to already? It was done to the youngest of the brothers, or the second youngest of the brothers. It was done to Ktanon Shel Shvatim. So Abba Kohen Badla says, Ma doch Yosef was Ktan Shel Shvatim. Not now that he is the youngest of the tribes. Not that now he is a little boy. But when they did the act, he was only a 17-year-old boy. And therefore the crime that they did to him then would not be the same as doing it to Yosef, Mishneh LeMelech, or a person who is a king. You can't compare the kid's situation. Nevertheless, they still weren't able to answer him. Nivhalu mipono, because after all was said and done, it was a terrible thing. It was a bad thing, and they still couldn't answer him. When it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we do the wrong thing with Hashem, and Hashem asks us, why do you do this? With HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's Lefi Ma Shehu. According to Hashem, it's the way He is. Hoya Hoya. Hashem doesn't change. Atuhu L'Shalai Nibra Olam, Atu Mishin Nibra Olam, etc. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the same. So therefore, how much more so, when we do something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls us to task for, there's no Ketanam Shel Shvatim there. Every circumstance is the same. It's the same Eibishter. And that's how we explain this beautifully, how the Ksav Sofer answered this question. Then Yosef goes on, Pasuk Dalet, and he says, Vayomer Yosef Elachav, Yosef says to Vayomer Yosef Elachav, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. Sorry, next Pasuk, Gesuna Elai, he says, Pasuk Dalet, come close to me, Vayigoshu, and they draw near, Vayomer, and he says, Ani Yosef Achichem, I'm Yosef, your brother, Asher Mechartim Oisi Mitzroimah, who you have sold to Egypt. Why does he tell them to come close? Because Rashi says, Geshua and Eli, when he sees them, they're getting shocked and they're moving backwards. They sort of can't believe what's happening there. Nasoigim la'achor, as Rashi puts it, they're retreating backwards. So Yosef feels, oi, I'm losing them. They're so embarrassed, they're going away from me. He now calls them gently, Beloshen Rak of Atachnunim, and then he sort of calls them back. But he does something else, says Rashi. He also shows them that he has a bris milah. Herolem Shumol. He tells them that I'm one of you. I'm your brother. I have a bris milah. And he also says to them, I'm Yosef, your brother, Asher Mechartem Oisim Mitzroima, who you have sold into Egypt. Sorry? Why would the bris prove anything? It's a good question. Why would the bris prove anything? Yes. Yeah. But they did that as a plot to get the people killed. Yeah. It is true. It's a question that is asked. Meforshim asked this question. We'll have a look at that in a minute. Let's have a look at the next few psukim. Vato now al teotzvu, do not be upset. Valicha b'neichem, don't be angry. Ki mechartem oisim mitzroima, that you've sold me here. Because Hashem has set me here, lemichya, as a source of sustenance, lifneichem, before you. And then he says, kizesh nosai merav, it's been 2 years of famine, bekerv ha'aretz, in the middle of the land, ve'oid chomishonim, and there's another 5 years coming, asher ein chorish v'kotsu, there'll be no plowing, no harvesting, it's going to be severe, 5 years. Ve'ishlecheini elokim lifneichem, and God has sent me before you, Losum lachem she'eris ba'aretz, to give you some hold, some remnant ba'aretz in the land, ulahachyos lachem, and to give you life, lifleta gadola, for a great refuge, for a great salvation. Okay? And then we come to Shlishi. So, here it seems at this point of time that he has shown him that he has a bris milah, that's true. And the Meforshim asked the question, the obvious question, how is bris milah itself a proof that he is Jewish? And the truth is, that was not the only proof. He does something else. And later on, as we'll soon see, he actually starts speaking them in their mother tongue, in Lashon HaKodesh.
But they, to be a king or to be high up, you had to speak 70 languages at that time, no?
That is correct. But the interesting thing is, the fact that he spoke Lashon HaKodesh seems to be itself not such a proof. And in fact, we're going to soon see a big machlokes between Rashi and Ramban about that. Just let's hold that for a minute. Let's go a bit further.
So what if they by now have recognized him anyway? I mean, he was their brother. So he had a beard and all that, but he's still the voice and so on. Wouldn't they have, like, naturally recognized him?
Correct. We're going to come to that too. We'll come to that too. There's a lot of different opinions as to what is happening here, and the big debate among the Rishonim and Acharonim as to what exactly happened here. It's quite interesting. Let's have a look further. Now, it's not you that have set me here. Ki v'alakim, God. V'yisimeni lov l'faro, he's made me a father, a friend for Pharaoh. Ulodon chol beiso, a master of his household. Umoshel b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, and a ruler over all the land of Egypt. He's mentioned three things here. Av l'faroi, adon chol beisoi, and Moshel b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. According to the Zayim L'Torah, these three things that are mentioned here in the Pasuk tell us that when he's telling them to tell, when he's telling this information to his brothers, he's explaining to them, it's not just, you know, my regalia, it's not just my clothes that I'm wearing that I look like a king and second in command. I have enormous, enormous power on over here. Normally in countries you have a minister for justice minister. And you have what's called a finance minister or treasurer. And then you have a person who is the minister for defense or the army, etc. And according to the Zohar Lotera, Yosef occupied three roles, all vital roles. And he explains the first one is of Lefare. I'm a legislator. I'm like a feather, a father of Pharaoh. I can make decrees in this kingdom. Legislation in Egypt only takes place through what I decide. If I decide that Egypt has to have circumcisions or something, I will do it, etc. I have the power of the legislator in the country. I have the second power, Odoin L'chol Beisai. I am the administrator, the financial controller of everything that happens in this kingdom. I am the treasurer. And furthermore, Moshe L'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, I control Egypt. Pharaoh has said that no man can lift a hand or a foot. No one can lift a, can take a horse, can arm themselves without my command. I am in charge of the defense. He's a pretty powerful person. He's in charge of everything in legislation, charge of all the defense of the country and all the finances of the country. And that is expressed by these statements. But he's saying this for a purpose. Look at the next pasuk. Maru v'alul, avi, hurry now and go up to my dad. V'amarta melov, and you shall say to him, koyomar bincha Yosef, so says your son Yosef, somani elokim la'adoin l'chol Mitzrayim, God has made me a master over all of Egypt. Rodo elai, come down to me, al tamoid, do not wait. Tamoid literally means stand. Here it means al tamoid, do not wait. And if you want to know where I get this from, have a look at the Unkelus. Look at the Aramaic on this and you'll say, what's the Unkelus say? Lo, who's got it? Unkelus, last word on Pasuk Tes. The word is loy titakav. What does akav mean? Akava, to hold, to wait. Lo ikev, ikev means to hold or to wait. So, don't wait. The urgency is expressed here. Quickly, do it quickly. Maru v'halu alavi, etc. According to this name, Lotera, he says, hurry, hurry. Why? Because what do people want to do after they have never seen each other for 22 years? What do you think people like to do? They like to schmooze and kibbutz and kiss each other and hug each other and not leave each other. And Yosef feels that is about to happen. And he says, guys, no time for farbrengen. Just move. Get out of here. Go to Teddy. Maharav Alulavi. In the words of the Zayim Latera, Meharaui hoyu lishtasheyay machem. I really would have loved to talk with you all day and to play and to chvez, whatever. But now, after Preder Shal Gabe Shona, after a separation 22 years. But no, quickly. Maharulavi and go and tell him. Fine. Then he says, interesting thing. Look at the pasuk. What does the pasuk say? Go and tell him. Go and tell dad. So says your son Yosef, God has made me a master of all of Egypt. Come down to me and do not wait. Now, the news that I'm alive, I'm sure you won't have trouble telling dad. You'll want to tell him that. You'll want to, because you know the pain that he's been going through. Well, you'll have no trouble doing that. But you might find it harder to tell him the fact that I'm a lord and a master of all of Egypt, etc. Why might they find that difficult to tell over? Because this was one of the source of grievances that happened, the source of the hatred. Hamoloch Timloch, are you ever going to be a lord? Are you ever going to be a Moshel? And here he is both a lord, he's a king, and he is a Moshel and a controller. And I know you might find that hard to pass that message on to dad, because that's almost being, it's always vindicating me and telling me that the dreams are actually coming true. And he feels that may be difficult. So he says, Mukhrachim atem lo emalai. You have to tell him that. Don't leave that part out of the news. Don't just say your son Yosef is alive. You must also say that I'm controller, etc., etc. Why does he need to say that? Says Oznaim LaTorah, I want you to tell him that, because if you don't, and if you just tell him that your brother, that your son Yosef is alive, what would Yaakov expect? He'd expect Yosef to come down. What are you staying there in Egypt? You're now revealing your identity. You're now the long-lost son Yosef. And you yourself say that every minute that he doesn't see you or he doesn't hear from you, that is painful like death itself, etc., he cannot live. So come down. You have to wait till old man, 130 years old, has to schlep up to Egypt? That's kibbut avayim. So therefore, according to the Zayim Latorah, he must add these words. He must add and say, the reason I cannot come now is Samani Elohim Ladoin Chol Mitzrayim. God has made me a master of all of Egypt. God has put me here. I cannot move from this spot. And he feels with Ruach HaKodesh that Hashem has now told him to stay here, and I want you to quickly bring him down. Rado Eli Al Tamoid, do not wait. Yes. Okay, so to answer that, good question. L'chora, a father wants to hear he's alive. He doesn't want to hear that he's a successful businessman, that he's made a multimillionaire, that he's now a financial controller of Egypt. Shkoyach, Yaakov Avinu cares about that. Yaakov Avinu wants to know he's a frum a yid and he's one of the sheep that go, you give up. So that's why Mepharshim explained that Rashi, that Yosef did not just say, tell him, so says your son Yosef, that I'm a big Abishter, so mani alakim. Or in the words of the Halakir Remedal Rimanova, the Halakir Remedal Rimanova used to say, Sumani Lakim Ludain Lachol Mitzroim, Ichem Gemach, the Eibishter for an Udain for Egypt, he used to say. Not God has made me a master, he said, I made God a master over all of Egypt. I brought Ruchnius into this land, I brought Gedlichkeit into this land. That's what Remedal Rimanova used to say. All right, it's a nice pshetel, it's not the possible pshat. But he learns that with these words, that would give a chayas to his father, unbelievable. He would be very happy with that. Yes.
This whole play of that, don't worry, Hashem's the one that's sitting here, so I can take care of you, and I'll keep you alive, blah, blah, blah. 2 years later, they're all slaves. They're all slaves. What's that from? 30 years later or something, they're all slaves. I assume Yaakov and Yosef both knew that this was the beginning of Galut. So why was there this whole excitement? That, oh, don't worry, that you sold me, is I'm here because I'm king, and I'm going to be so good to you, and it's going to be great for you here. Calm down, bring all your stuff, don't worry about staying there. So, you know what I mean? It's like almost like, kind of soon we're all going to be like really bad for us. Have that for fun.
Did I know that? And they
were going down to China. This way they were going down. In a very respectful kind of way, not in shackles.
That's true. But the
Gemara says that Yaakov Avinu was meant to come down in chains, like a convicted convict, like they came here to Australia. Yeah. Chazal say, Ro'oya. And therefore he says to him, you are lucky. I came down to Egypt as a slave boy. I came being slaves as a slave boy. But you, my father, are coming down in pomp and grandeur. When Yaakov came down to Egypt, the reception he had was unparalleled. It was unbelievable. Yes, it's true that afterwards it was going to be the Golas, the Dalai Lama, but that's the way it is. Yeah? Sorry?
Just Yaakov
and his family? No, Yaakov and his family, sure. It was totally different to the way it was going to happen. Radoi Lael Talmud, come, let's go. We'll talk more, a little bit more if we have time maybe about this tomorrow. A very interesting take on this as to how the Golus was going to happen. You see, the 400 years could have been in a different way. It could have been 400 years bondage, but it wasn't. It wasn't 400 years bondage. It was much, much less. Hundreds of years were cut off the harsh bondage of it. And we'll look maybe a bit more about that tomorrow. What's interesting here is that here he says, Maru, hurry to my father, and he said, you shall say to him, so says your son Yosef, Samani Elokim Ladon Chol Mitzrayim. And some of the Farshim ask, why do you need to say the words, so says your son Yosef, Samani Elokim? Why didn't it just say, go up to my father and say, he's alive? And why need to say, so says your son Yosef? Koyamar Bincha Yosef. Who else is it? So says Yosef. Or so says your son, Koyamar Bincha.
That's the answer, that I'm still your son.
Okay.
But I'm still your son, the one that you really want me to be.
Yes. Okay. Good. That could be like that. But the combination of Bincha and Yosef, why needs to say the word Yosef again, etc. So here you'll find an interesting explanation brought by the base Yaakov HaKohen Traub, and also hinted to, or also used, that some Sofer also mentions this as well. Very important part of the story. Right back at the time when they saw Yosef coming, what did they say? They say, what was their, when they saw the 17-year-old brother Yosef coming along, what was their first words that they say? Hinei bal hachalome selazah. Ah, the dreamer is coming. We're going to get him. The dreamer is coming. Okay. What do they not say? What do they not say? They do not say, Hine, behold, Yosef Baal HaChalomes Bo. Yosef the dream. They never said that. They just said, Hine, Baal HaChalomes Bo. Okay. Why? And here the Mefarshim explain, as I said, I think the Beis Yaakov says it, notices that when someone doesn't like someone, what do they not say? They don't say their name. They just cannot bring themselves to save their name. Lahavdil, Lahavdil. We have, you know, Rishoim in the we say they don't say his name. They say the Yemach Shemoinika. You know, that's how they say Lahavdil. So when you come to the story and you see here that they say Bal Hachalomis Halazeh Bo, see the dream is coming. They refuse to even say the name Yosef. They can't bring themselves to refer to their brother as Yosef. It's Yenem. It's Er Yenem. No, the person. Furthermore, when later on they decide to go and bring the news to their dad, what do they say to their father? They take the shirt of Yosef, they slaughter a goat, and they dip the shirt into blood, and they send it back, and they bring it to their father, Vayomer, and they said, Zos Matsona, we found this coat. Hakerna, please recognize, Haksonas Bincha Hi'imloi, is it the tunic of your son or not? What do they delete? No name of Yosef. They do not say, is this the tunic of Yosef? Never said it. They don't want to say the name Yosef again. Why? Because they have such a, if you like, such a seething hatred for their brother. They cannot bring themselves to even say it. Listen to the next few words, what Yaakov, their father, replies. Vayakira, and he recognizes it. Vayomer, and he says, Oi, kesoines b'ni, it is the shirt, the tunic of my son. Chayara chalasa, a wild animal has devoured him. Ah, Torev Torev Yosef, Yosef is surely torn. But look at Rashi on that. So Rashi says, Chaya ro'a chalosu. He says, Nitznasa baruch ha-kodesh. There was a spark of ruach ha-kodesh. Maybe there's going to be trouble with a beast, and that was the wife of Potiphar, and so on and so forth. And earlier on, or later on, his suspicions are aroused. Is it really a wild animal that devoured him? Or is it perhaps my children who are compared to animals that have devoured him and have done something? Yehuda is compared to a lion, and this one is compared to a snake, and etc., etc. Is it possible? Says the Chasam Sofer, perhaps his suspicions are heightened because they cannot say the word Yosef. So listen to his interpretation. Vayakira, and he recognizes it, and he says, it's the tunic of my son. Chayara achalosa, a wild animal, has devoured him. But then he thinks, maybe it's not. Maybe my son, maybe there's some foul play here. Why? Toroif toraf Yosef, because the name Yosef is torn from their lips. Toraf toraf Yosef. I can't hear Yosef being told. And something in him is working. Says Chasam Sofer, he's thinking, maybe there's something more to it. Maybe there's some play. He doesn't know. He doesn't know. Hashem doesn't reveal it to him. And there's a whole machlokes rishonim akra, and the whole machlokes as to whether he ever finds out. Right? Aracham HaKadosh says he did. Not everyone agrees. I don't think we'd ever agree. But anyway, it's interesting. Aracham HaKadosh says that there's no way that Yaakov would have left any stone unturned to find out what happened. Once he found out, he knew it. But anyway, yeah. Correct. It might have made it even more severe, but again, it was a suspicion. It was a suspicion. He wasn't sure. But these words, Chasam Sofer, I never forget these words, Chasam Sofer. Toroif toraf Yosef. The words, I can't hear the name Yosef, is being torn from lips. Based on that, we can now understand, and I think it's the Beis Yaakov who therefore says, if we look at our Pasuk, it has such a different meaning now. Look at Pasuk Tes again. He says, Maru v'alulavi, hurry, go up to dad, v'amartim alav, and you shall say to him, Koyomar bincha Yosef. So says your son Joseph, your brother who you never could bring yourself to say his name. Please, Yosef now tells his brothers, tell me your daddy, tell our daddy that it's Bincha Yosef, it's your son Yosef that is telling you this. Ah, And later on, when the father will hear this, this will give him encouragement. Ah, the love is back again. They are together, and so on and so forth. That's how he understands these words, Bincha Yosef. Pasuk Yud, V'yashavta be'eretz Goshen, and you shall dwell in the land of Goshen. You'll be close to me. You and your children and your grandchildren. And your flock and your cattle, everything that you have. I will sustain you there. There's another 5 years of famine. Panti vorish, lest you become impoverished. You, your family, and everything that you have. Rashi says the word tivoresh means lest you be impoverished. That's how he explains it. Now he suggests the land of Goshen. There is no comment on Rashi as to why the land of Goshen was the optimal land for settling his father and his family. And therefore the question is Lama. Why does he choose the land of Goshen? And here we find three reasons brought down. Last time the Torah mentions three different reasons. Number one, he says that what was painful for his father was to leave the land of his beloved ancestors. Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan. Very hurt him. We know that. Hashem has to tell him, Al tira medo mitzrayma. Do not fear, do not fear. You can see Yaakov desperately does not want to leave the land. So therefore, if he's going to leave the land of Israel and go into a foreign country, go into the country that at least has the back towards Israel. And apparently the land of Goshen has Gaboy le'Eretz Yisrael. It backs onto the land of Egypt. And in fact, the Tosfos says this. It's not just the Zman HaTorah. He's quoting the Tosfos that says, Eretz Goshen was higher than the land of Egypt, and it was standing with its back to the land of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore his father was, so to speak, close to him there. And this would be some sort of a comfort. Okay. From here, there's Naim Latourah. It says an interesting thing. People don't do this, but I don't know if people do this. He says that if a people have to leave Israel, go to a country that's closer to Israel. I'm just saying. He says, he says, from here is a proof that if a Yid has to leave Eretz Yisrael, he has to be a Yored. Zolagain, so a country which is smucha, closer, so that when you want to, you can come back quickly back to Eretz Yisrael. Anyway. What's the second reason he brings? Second suggestion, he says that why Eretz Goshen, selling land of Goshen, is because the land of Goshen has an attachment to Yaakov's family. Yaakov's grandmother Sarah was given the land of Goshen as a compensation by Pharaoh for taking her. And therefore, if the Jews would therefore have a, if the Egyptians would have had a taina, what are you giving them Eretz Goshen for? So this would be some sort of thing. It was an old history, it was a known thing in history that Pharaoh had given the land of Goshen to Sarah. That's Chazal say that. And that was the second reason he did it.
Not forever.
I don't know forever, not forever, but
no,
there was...
So does that mean that the Jews now own Goshen?
Yes. Yeah, well, Sarah did. Sarah did. Okay. L'chora, Sarah did. And by virtue of that, maybe it's not our chosen land, obviously, but that's the way it is. It's interesting to know that Goshen is, HaGoshen, the land of Goshen, is related to Hanukkah because Nun HaGimel Shin is, of course, the HaGoshen, which is quite interesting. Yeah. Also, HaGoshen, I think, is the Gematria of Mashiach, is it? I think it is. But anyway. I'm not sure. Third reason he suggests the land of Goshen was chosen is because Egypt was a thriving country and the most developed country in the world at the time. It had the most sophisticated arsenal of weapons, the carriages. You were forbidden to take out any carriages out of Egypt, etc. And the land of Goshen was not so developed for residential living, because the land of Goshen was more like Canberra. It was more like the seat of government. It was more like the offices, etc., etc. It was more shayach to the malchus, to the kingdom. And therefore, he chose Goshen because had he chosen some other places in Egypt, it could have bred anti-Semitism against the Jews. Look, they're coming to take over our neighborhoods. They're moving into areas. And therefore, strategically, says Oznaim Latorah, he chose the land of Goshen because that was known as the shayachus to malchus. It was more governmental buildings there, and this would be an easier way of settling his family. So there's a number of reasons why he chose Goshen. But let's have a look at at Pasuk Yud Beis. V'hinei aneichem rois, behold, your eyes are watching, v'enei achi binyamin, and the eyes of my brother Binyamin, kifi amdabra aleichem, that it is my mouth that is speaking to you. V'hiragaratim lavi, you shall tell my father, es kol kvedi all my honor b'mitzrayim, what you've seen, es kol asherisem, everything that you've seen, and v'hartim v'hartim esabiyahinam, quickly come and bring my father down here, and let's see if we can understand what exactly is he asking them to see. Behold, your eyes are seeing, and the eyes of my Binyamin, that it's my mouth that is speaking to you. What's strange about the pasuk is, do you see someone speaking to you, or do you hear someone speaking to you? Normally you hear. So why didn't it say, Behine, behold, ozneichem shoimim, your ears are hearing, that it's my mouth speaking to you. What does it mean, your eyes are seeing that I'm speaking to you? Rashi is bothered by this, and therefore Rashi adds a word, which the Pasuk does not say. V'hine enechem rois, behold, your eyes are witnessing b'chvoidi. You're witnessing my honor. You're seeing my honor. You're seeing also that I'm your brother, shani chaychem. And you're seeing that I'm circumcised like you, shani malkachem. But you also are privy to the fact that I'm speaking to you. V'oid kifi amadabar aleichem, it is my mouth talking to you, b'loshen ha-kodesh, in the Hebrew tongue, in the loshen ha-kodesh. And therefore, you have the proof to tell that you have my identification, I'm circumcised, and I'm also speaking loshen ha-kodesh, and therefore, you should be comforted that it is really your brother Yosef that is talking to you. Okay, so Rashi has explained why it needs to say, what does it mean by your eyes are witnessing? But this comment about the fact that it is my mouth speaking to you, Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, is a strange thing. And Ramban is probably one of the earliest commentators to argue with Rashi, and he says, no way. He says, there's no way that this could have been a means of identification. Speaking Hebrew, he says. He says, there were dozens of people going, the nearest country to Egypt was the land of Canaan, the land of the Hebrews. So the fact that he's speaking Hebrew is not a proof, apart from the fact that he needed to have a language to become a king, etc. But it was commonplace for hundreds of people in Egypt could have been speaking in Hebrew. There was interaction, people were traders, coming backwards and forwards. So what's the proof? There were Canaanim, many Canaanites that would speak perhaps in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, and they would have done that. Also, the Bris Milah, to have a Bris Milah, again, that itself seems to be strange, that that's going to be a means of identification. As we said before, it was always known that the people had the Bris Milah, Yishmaelim had the Bris Milah, from the whole side of Avram's family, Bnei Keturah. And where did Keturah come from? She was Hagar, she came from Egypt. So it was not so uncommon to have a Bris Milah, especially since he organized, and many people had a Bris Milah in Egypt. He organized that. Well, one of the answers to that is the fact that he asked them to have a Bris Milah. He didn't need to have one himself, obviously. But the concept of everyone else having a Bris is interesting. So the Gur Aryeh, Maral Miprag, answers, and he defends Rashi against Ramban, and he says that, you're right, each one of those signs alone would not have been sufficient identification. But the combination of both of them was. To say that he's got the Bris Milah and that he's talking Lashon HaKodesh, all this together would be too much to leave to coincidence, and therefore the combination of these signs, and that's why Rashi has to say V'oid, and furthermore, it is my mouth talking to you and Lashon HaKodesh, etc. But I want to conclude here with two explanations that are a little bit different to the Maral, certainly quite different. But they explain, what does Rashi mean, Lashon HaKodesh? Why is this going to be such an important means of identification? And it comes from a number of Sfarim that actually you'll see it in. You'll find it in Iturei Torah, but you'll find it earlier on in the works of Rabbi Yonason Eberschitz, who says that, what's the pshat that if he speaks in Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, that they'll be able to identify him? And he says as follows, the Gemara Chulin brings that one of the clearest means of identifying someone is by the voice. Tivus eina dekola. And we can be, you can rely on, you can do amazing halachas can come from that. If you hear the voice and you know who's speaking, you can say the person's alive, etc., etc. It's an amazing, powerful voice of identification. Lahabdil, lahabdil, these days, the Australian Taxation Office has a system where in order to ring up and identify yourself, you have to say, the first thing they identify is, please say, in Australia, we use means of identification. You have to actually repeat those words. And if you don't say it in your normal tone, that won't identify. You have to, if you put on an accent. Yeah, that's, I know it now because as soon as I say it, one of the first things today, they're using it. It's in technology. That instead of using a password, etc., you just say your name. Please say, in Australia, that we use a means of identification. You actually repeat those words and they know straight away. You go straight through as identifying yourself. Lahavdil. But in the times, the Gemara brings down that Ktivus entered the collar. Your voice is one of the most powerful means of communication. And therefore, the Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz asks, how is it possible that Yosef did not, that the brothers were not able to tell who Yosef was simply from the fact that they hear his voice talking to them all the time? He's talking to them. So that should have been the best identification. No matter what disguise he puts on his face, etc., heads, langs, beard. Chazal say he had a beard, that's why they couldn't recognize him. What about the voice? The voice is such a powerful means of identification.
Maybe not a different language.
Says the Rebbe, that's the difference. Until now, where the Gemara says that Tivus Ein Kol, when do you say that a voice is the most powerful form of recognition? If you hear it in your native language, the same language that they talk when they were kids growing up in Yaakov's household, then it would have been identification. But until now, they only hear Egyptian, and the interpreter is giving it over to them. So therefore, until now, they weren't able to identify him. Says Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz, but now Yosef says to them, Kifi amadaber aleichem. It is my mouth talking to you. How do you know it's me? Because Belashon HaKodesh, Ichred Mamaloshon. I'm now talking the language we talked at home. And if that is the case, surely you should know that Ani Yosef, it is certainly Yosef, Fi amadaber aleichem. It is my mouth that is talking to you, and you should be comforted by the fact that I'm not an imposter still, etc. We didn't do the third explanation, and that is another explanation as to how we know that speaking in the Hebrew tongue in the Loshon HaKodesh was the means of identifying. I can either do it now, but it's 10 to 12, and you probably want to have the refreshments, so maybe we'll leave that for tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to another one of our great recordings. We hope you enjoyed listening to this lecture and found it enriching and inspiring. To download and listen to many of our other recordings, please sign up today for a free membership via our website, www.jml.org.au.